Welcome to SCOTUSCast, Federal Jurisdiction and Injuries Abroad Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On October 5th, 2015, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in OBB Personenwerker AG v. Sachs. This case involves a dispute regarding whether federal courts have jurisdiction over a lawsuit brought by Carol Sachs against OBB Personenwerker, the Austrian National Railroad, when her legs were crushed by a train in Austria while she was using a Eurail pass that she had purchased in the United States. The question before the Supreme Court is twofold. One, whether common law principles of agency apply in determining whether an entity is an agent of a foreign state under the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act of 1976. And two, whether under the first clause of the commercial activity exception of the FSIA, a tort claim for personal injuries suffered in connection with travel outside of the United States is based upon the allegedly tortious conduct occurring outside of the United States, or the preceding sale of the ticket in the United States for the travel entirely outside the United States. To discuss the case, we have Edwin D. Williamson, who is of counsel at Sullivan & Cromwell, LLP. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And to now, Mr. Williamson.
OBB is the Austrian state-owned passenger railway operator. It is one of 30 members of the Eurail group, which markets rail passes to non-Europeans. In March 2007, Diane Sachs purchased a Eurail pass online in the United States from Rail Pass Europe, which I'll refer to as RPE, located in Massachusetts. RPE is an issuing office for Eurail Pass. In April 2007 in Innsbruck, Sachs paid 30 euros to upgrade to a couchette for a trip to Prague. While trying to board the train, she fell between the tracks. Both legs were crushed by the moving train and had to be amputated above the knee. She claims the injury was caused by OBB negligently moving the train while she was boarding. OBB claims the train was already moving when she tried to board. In April 2008, Sachs filed suit in the Northern District of California, asserting claims for negligence, strict liability for a design defect, strict liability for a failure to warn, as well as breaches of implied warranties of fitness and merchantability. She claimed that she had purchased her pass through OBB's agent, Eurail, and RPE. OBB filed a motion to dismiss on grounds of, among other things, foreign sovereign immunity. The issues in this case arise under the first clause of the commercial activity exception of the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act. Section 1604 of the FSIA provides that, quote, a foreign state shall be immune from the jurisdiction of the courts of the United States and of the states, except as provided in sections 1605 to 1607, close quotes. Section 1605A2, which reflects the restrictive approach to foreign sovereign immunity, provides three exceptions to section 1604, where the action is based upon, one, a commercial activity carried on in the United States by the foreign state, two, an act performed in the United States in connection with a commercial activity of the foreign state elsewhere, and three, an act outside the territory of the United States in connection with a commercial activity of the foreign state elsewhere, and that act causes a direct effect in the United States. Section 1603, which contains definitions, defines a foreign state to include an agency or instrumentality of a foreign state, which it in turn defines as a separate legal person, a majority of whose shares are owned by the state. Section 1603 also defines a commercial activity carried on in the United States by a foreign state as meaning commercial activity carried on by the foreign state and having a substantial contact with the United States. There was no dispute as to whether OBB was an agent or instrumentality of the Austrian government, and thus came within the definition of foreign state for purposes of Section 1604 and 1605. Rather, the issues presented to the Supreme Court were, one, whether, for the purposes of determining whether URAIL or RPE was acting as an agent of OBB, so that its activities in the United States could be attributed to OBB for the purposes of the first commercial activity exception in Section 1605, the express definition of agency in 1603, the factors set forth in First National City Bank v. Banco para el Comercio de Cuba, generally referred to as BANSEC, or common law principles of agency control. This is the agency question. The second issue, whether under that commercial activity exception, a tort claim for personal injuries suffered in connection with travel outside of the United States is based upon the allegedly tortious conduct occurring outside of the United States or the preceding sale of the ticket in the United States for the travel entirely outside the United States. This is the based upon issue. The district court granted OBB's motion in an unpublished opinion, finding the connection between OBB and RPE too attenuated to establish subject matter jurisdiction. Well, the plaintiff fails to establish that the commercial activity here was in fact undertaken by a foreign state as required by the FSIA. Thus, OBB, as an instrumentality of the Republic of Austria, was immune from suit. Two judges on the Ninth Circuit panel agreed with the district court's judgment, but not on the rationale for affirming it. Adopting the district court's reasoning, Judge Tallman agreed that the ticket sale could not be attributed to OBB, relying on BANSEC. Judge B, by contrast, assumed arguendo that an agency relationship exists between OBB and RPE. He concluded, however, that Sachs' suit was not, quote, based upon, close quotes, the commercial activity OBB carried on in the United States, because the allegedly negligent acts and omissions at issue here took place in Austria. The third judge, Judge Gould, voted to reverse the district court. He reasoned that A, common law agency principles, not BANSEC's alter ego test, control where a foreign state carries on commercial activity under the first exception. B, Sachs's lawsuit is based upon OBB's commercial activity. And C, that activity has substantial contact with the United States, thereby satisfying the first exception's final requirement. On rehearing en banc, the Court of Appeals, in an opinion written by Judge Gould, reversed by an 8-3 vote, adopting, not surprisingly, Judge Gould's reasoning. The en banc court first held that common law agency principles control whether a foreign state carries on commercial activity in the United States. Second, the Court of Appeals held that Sachs's action was based upon commercial activity because an element of each of her claims arose from OBB's sale of Sachs's ticket. With regard to her negligence claim, the ticket sale formed a common carrier passenger relationship between Sachs and OBB, giving rise under the applicable substantive law of California, giving rise to a duty of utmost care. Similarly, the Court of Appeals reasoned that a transaction between a seller and a consumer was a necessary prerequisite to proving her state law claims for design defects, failure to warn, and breaches of implied warranties. Finally, the Court of Appeals held that OBB's railway enterprise had substantial contact with the United States because it involved the regular marketing, selling, and arranging of foreign travel in the United States. OBB did not contest this last holding in the Supreme Court. Judge O'Scanlan dissented, arguing that the standard announced in BANSEC should control whether an agency is an agent of a foreign state. In a separate dissent, then Chief Judge Kosinski agreed with Judge O'Scanlan that RPE's ticket sale should not be attributed to OBB. He also maintained that all of Sachs' claims failed the first exceptions, quote, based upon, close quotes, requirement because the injury and negligence and any negligence occurred in Austria. Before getting into what happened at oral argument at the Supreme Court, let me discuss the Supreme Court's 1993 holding in Saudi Arabia v. Nelson. I would note that I was on the U.S. government's brief in that case as the State Department's legal advisor. In this case, Scott Nelson and his wife filed an action for damages against the petitioners, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, a Saudi hospital, and the hospital's purchasing agent in the United States. They alleged, among other things, that respondent Nelson suffered personal injuries as a result of the Saudi government's unlawful detention and torture of him, and their negligent failure to warn him of the possibility of severe retaliatory severe retaliatory action if he attempted to report on-the-job hazards. The Nelsons asserted jurisdiction under the FSIA. A district court dismissed for lack of subject matter jurisdiction. The Court of Appeals reversed, concluding that Nelson's recruitment and hiring were commercial activities upon which the Nelson's action was based for purposes of the first commercial activity exception. The Supreme Court held that the Nelson's action was not based on a commercial activity within the meaning of 1605A2, and the Act therefore conferred no jurisdiction over their suit. In reaching its conclusion, the Court explained that while the Act is not divine based upon, the phrase is most naturally read to mean those elements of a claim that, if proven, would entitle a plaintiff to relief under this theory of the case, and found that the statutory context confirmed that the phrase requires something more than a mere connection with or relation to activity. Quote, while these arguably commercial activities led to the conduct that eventually injured the Nelsons, they are not the basis of the Nelson suit. Close quotes. The court also held that the petitioner's tortious conduct failed to qualify as commercial activity within the meaning of the Act. The intentional conduct alleged in Nelson, alleged by the Nelsons, that is, the Saudi government's wrongful arrest, imprisonment, and torture, boils down to the abuse of the power of the police, and therefore not a commercial activity. Finally, in the last paragraph of the majority opinion, the court dismissed Nelson's claim of failure to warn as, quote, merely a semantic ploy, close quote. According to the court, a plaintiff could recast virtually any claim of intentional tort committed by sovereign act as a claim of failure to warn. Quote, to give jurisdictional significance to this feint of language would effectively thwart the act's manifest purpose to codify the restrictive theory of foreign sovereign immunity, close quotes. The court's opinion was written by Justice Souter. the Chief Justice and Justices O'Connor, Scalia, and Thomas joined. Justice Kennedy also joined, except for the last paragraph, the dismissal of the failure to warn as a semantic ploy. Justice White concurred in the judgment on the grounds that the commercial conduct upon which the respondents based their complaint was not carried on in the United States, basically disagreeing with the commercial versus sovereign distinction. Justice White did not discuss the failure to warn issue. Justice Blackmun concurred in Justice White's opinion. Justice Kennedy, in a separate opinion, agreed with the commercial versus sovereign distinction made by the majority, but dissented on the failure to warn point. According to Justice Kennedy, Nelson's claims alleging that the hospital, the kingdom, and the U.S. agent were negligent in failing during their recruitment of Nelson to warn him of foreseeable dangers were based on commercial activity, having substantial contact with the United States. According to Justice Kennedy, having established that this established a jurisdictional basis, and therefore the Nelson's claim should have survived the petition's motion to dismiss. Justice Stevens concurred in this portion of the opinion, as did Justice Blackmun. Justice Stevens filed a further dissent, which I will not go into here. In its briefs to the Supreme Court in this case, OBB basically argued that the Sachs claims were not based upon the ticket sale, but rather on the tort that occurred in Austria. OBB also argued that the agency standard was added in Section 1603, not a common law principle, and that the alter ego test in Banzek should also apply. On the agency issue, Sachs argued in her brief that the common law principle of agency should apply for the purposes of attributing URL and RPE activities to OBB. As to based upon, Sachs argued that because the first commercial activity exception refers to activity rather than act, as in the second and third exceptions, the court should look at the overall activities of OBB, that is, running a railway, including its ticket-selling activities in the U.S. The brief sought to distance this case from Nelson by emphasizing the holding in Nelson that the activities of the Saudi government were not commercial activities. The U.S., in its amicus brief, supported the Ninth Circuit's holding on the agency issue, which is similar to the position we took in our brief in Nelson. In refuting OBB's position, the U.S. government brief said, quote, petitioner mistakenly asserts that the definition of agency or instrumentality of a foreign state describes the only set of entities whose acts can be attributed to a foreign state for purposes of determining whether the foreign state has carried on commercial activities in the United States. Instead, Section 1603 defines what type of entities can be considered a foreign state for purposes of claiming foreign sovereign immunity in its own right, but does not speak as to how and when a non-immune entities acts can be attributed to the foreign state. On the based upon issue, the U.S. government rejected the Ninth Circuit holding that an action is based upon commercial activity in the United States if an element of the plaintiff's claim consists of conduct that occurred in commercial activity carried on in the United States, or if such activity is an essential fact to proving any element of the claim. Rather, the government argued that the based upon requires that the gravamen of the case have occurred in a commercial activity in the U.S. According to the U.S. government brief, just as in Nelson, It is those alleged bad acts and not the commercial activities that preceded their commission that formed the basis of the plaintiff's suit for purposes of the FSIA, and therefore did not meet the based upon test. At the oral argument, the questioning of OBB's lawyer, who was Juan Basombrio of Dorsey and Whitney's Costa Mesa, California office, centered initially around whether there was more than a due process standard for jurisdiction, or whether the FSIA required—whether it was the same standard for jurisdiction, or whether the FSIA required something more. Skeptics were Kagan, Kinsburg, Sotomayor, and Kennedy. Kagan asked if the case had been a simple failure to honor the ticket, a breach of contract case, would OBB be liable? Basombrio said no, arguing the agency point. Those four justices, as well as Justice Scalia, indicated considerable surprise. Deputy Solicitor General Edward Needler appeared for the U.S. government. He started with the point about whether FSIA simply incorporates due process standards and stated bluntly that, quote, we think it does not, close quotes. On the based upon issue, he emphasized Nelson's holding that you look to the torts that cause the injury and not the precedent commercial activity in the U.S., emphasizing the need to distinguish between tort claims and contract claims. In response to questioning by Kagan about warranty claims, Needless simply replied that you recharacterize something that is basically a tort abroad by claiming there was a failure to warn. Jeffrey Fisher from Stanford Law School argued for Sachs. Kagan posed a hypothetical of buying a ticket to the Vienna Opera in the U.S. and slipping in a puddle in Vienna. Fisher dodged by saying that there was no implied warranty in that case. Justice Breyer seemed particularly skeptical of some of Fisher's arguments, and both Justice Alito and the chief questioned whether establishing jurisdiction in the U.S. really added anything to Sachs's case. As usual, it is impossible to guess how the Supreme Court will decide this case. I would note the following. Justices Thomas and Scalia were both in the majority in Nelson. I do not see any significant differences between this case and Nelson on the based upon issue. Nothing that Justice Scalia said at the oral argument would indicate a different view. Justice Breyer seemed somewhat sympathetic to the fancy pleading argument, dismissing the recharacterizing the case as an implied warranty. Justice Kagan indicated skepticism of both sides. After an initial indication that she did not see why the due process standard was not applicable, Justice Sotomayor did not say much. And Justice Alito and the Chief seemed mainly interested in some of the intricacies of the court's case, such as the Gravamen issue. Justice Kennedy was pretty openly skeptical about Basombrio's unwillingness to find liability and the failure to honor the ticket hypothetical, but did not say much after that. Given Kennedy's dissent in Nelson, I could see him leading a majority to send the case back for further proceedings as to whether the purchase of the ticket triggered an implied warranty that might have been breached here. On the other hand, according to the U.S. brief opposing the grant of certiorari, it is possible that that is a moot point going forward because a standard forum selection clause in the International Railway Convention requires a claim to be brought in the place where the transportation was provided.
thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.